Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
Over the past few years with the rise of social media, there's a hashtag associated with everything. And we started using the hashtag CattleCon, and it actually really morphed from there. And folks started calling it CattleCon and referring to it as CattleCon.
CattleCon 25 coming up in early February in San Antonio. Kristen Torres is Executive Director for Meetings and Events with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
Cattle Industry Convention and NCBA Trade Show is a mouthful. And CattleCon really rolls off the tongue. And so that's, we've kind of ran with it from there. And then people really picked that up and just took it and ran with it. And so now we're forever known as CattleCon.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
As of today, we have only 142 legislative days before taxes will go up for every single American if Congress fails to act.
Missouri Representative and Chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, Jason Smith.
1 year from now, the paychecks of every working American will look a lot different, as on average, their taxes will go up 22%. During the first Trump presidency, the tax cuts were the rocket fuel that propelled America out of the stagnation of the Obama years. By every conceivable measure, American workers and the economy were better off. Americans earned bigger paychecks, unemployment for every group was at historic lows, and poverty dropped to its lowest level in American history. Buying a home was an achievable part of the American dream, not just a dream never to become reality. Low-income taxpayers were helped more than those at the top. American earners under $100,000 received a 16% tax cut, while the amount of taxes paid by the top 1% in fact increased. Small business optimism hit record highs. American corporations stopped shipping their headquarters, jobs, and tax revenues overseas. The economy soared, creating 5 million new jobs. In the 2 years after the 2017 tax cuts, the economy grew a full percentage point faster than the Congressional Budget Office projected. And over 10 years, that equals $3 trillion in new revenue. Even though we lowered taxes, tax revenue went up. In fact, we have already seen $1.6 trillion in higher revenues than what CBO projected.
Richard Neal from Massachusetts is the ranking member.
Let's be clear. I've been a pro-growth, pro-prosperity, but pro-fair shot member of this committee, which is exactly what the American people are asking us to do right now. Recently, the Financial Times and The Economist magazine said that the American economy was the envy of the world. I was struck by the hearing title, quote, "The Need to Extend Trump's Tax Cuts for Working Families," when we know that most of these cuts went to people at the very top. Indeed, the top 2%. The American people are living under this tax plan, and they need relief from it. The American people need lower costs. Our Republican colleagues are looking to come to the aid of the strongest and wealthiest among us once again. Last week, Treasury released a new report confirming that if this exercise was actually about lowering costs for working families, Republicans wouldn't be running their 2017 playbook back to the tune of $1.8 trillion of borrowed money. I don't understand the logic of suggesting that we're going to attack the national debt and simultaneously add $4 trillion to it by a tax cut proposal. A reminder that we had the opportunity here to address the national debt and tax relief for middle-class Americans and people at the lower end of the scale, but that was not what was entertained. So we're talking now about adding $4.6 trillion to the deficit as part of their mandate. We could lower this cost by making up the difference by extending premium tax credits in the Democrat expanded child tax credit initiative. We could put more money directly into the pockets of those who need it. It's been proven time and again that parents who received our monthly payments spent the money on necessities. Child poverty was cut in half, and a recent study found parents actually cut back on cigarette use, likely because of just decreased stress from the security of having more relief.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
We're trying to create a community there as part of the convention.
Kristen Torres with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association on the upcoming CattleCon 25.
On the trade show floor, you'll find every day we have a reception happening there. We serve lunch in there. So it's really beyond just a trade show. We're really trying to help people make connections with like-minded folks. And then we also want to give people an experience that they're not going to have somewhere else. So in addition to all of those things, you're going to see some really big events like our general sessions. We have a general session each day. And then we have some evening events as well that are included in those registrations. So those evening events this year are a lot of, those are fun to plan every year. But San Antonio is such a fantastic city. It's, a great tourist destination. It's very family friendly. They're just a great, they know hospitality in that city. And one of the things that we're doing is actually an event at, it's a venue that's called ESPE, but it's actually an old train depot. And so we're having a big Tex Fest over there. And so it's kind of a y'all come kind of event. Anybody that's got a full registration, even exhibitors are able to attend that. That will be on Wednesday the 5th. And then on the closing night of the convention, we're doing something also very uniquely San Antonio. And we're taking the group out to the San Antonio Livestock Show and Rodeo. So the last night of our convention is actually the first night of the rodeo. And we'll get to see the full thing, rodeo in full swing there. And then they also do a concert that night. And so we'll close out the rodeo night with a concert with Scotty McQuarrie. So we're super excited for everything that we have planned at the convention.
One general session always features Randy Block in the Cattle Facts Annual Outlook Seminar. Others include...
We're kicking off the convention with a gentleman by the name of Lieutenant Colonel Dan Rooney. And he's actually the founder of Folds of Honor, which is a charity that provides scholarships for military kids. He has a great message. He's going to talk about Folds of Honor. He's going to talk about his military background and his experiences. But one of the things that's great about Folds of Honor is that they really focus on ag kids as well. So he really has a connection to the industry. So I think people are going to love hearing from him. Very motivational, very inspirational kind of session there. And then our second general session, which will be on Wednesday morning, is a gentleman by the name of Shannon Farrell. And he's an attorney and he's also a professor at Oklahoma State University. And he's going to talk about something that a lot of folks are dealing with right now. And that's how we're attracting the next generation back to the ranch and back to the farm and how we're keeping them there and how we're keeping this industry going. And then from that session, he's going to do a series of breakout sessions as part of Cattlemen's College that kind of dig in a little bit more about the whole generational transfer and some of the legalities around that and really things that farmers and ranchers are dealing with on a daily basis.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
This is based on actual certification information from FSA.
Mark Brown is Director of Field Services with Lubbock-based Plains Cotton Growers.
For the state of Texas, if you look at the January certified acreage numbers from FSA, we saw a total on all upland cotton of 33% abandonment in Texas. And that abandonment number on the high plains, more specifically, was 45% abandonment for all cotton. About 60% of our dry land was abandoned this year. And that is a high number, much higher than average abandonment rates. But we did have a terrible August this year. And the other thing that I would say that is interesting to me is that the abandonment rate was less than the two previous seasons. And going back on the hot lanes, if we look at abandonment rates for 2023 for all production it on cotton, upland cotton, it was 61% abandonment in 23, and that number actually reached 71% abandonment in 2022. So unfortunately, as everyone knows, we have had three very difficult and challenging growing seasons out here on the high plains of Texas. And so now we've got a little moisture in the ground, and I certainly hope that things will turn around for producers and for the entire industry. And I hope that we'll see a little kinder growing season for the 2025 season.
So what will the 2024 crop look like?
I think we're to the point that we kind of see overall where we're going to land for this particular year. So we just had the January world supply and demand estimates come out. And as we look at those for the United States, the estimate on cotton production is 14.4 million bales, and they are projecting Texas at 4.1 million bales, which would be roughly 28% of U.S. production. Now, if we break that down a little further, I don't have numbers particularly for the High Plains as of yet, but if we go and look at our classing office estimates, we see that the Lubbock classing office, as of the last report, which was on January the 9th, they were estimating that they were 96% complete based on their projections. And then the La Mesa classing office was at 89%. So we're virtually winding down there. And those two classing offices have classed a total number of samples from 2.256 million bales. Now, I would caution the listeners out there that we still have to divide these out by county and even by state line in some of these GM samples that may come from an adjacent state or from a different district. So there'll be some separation to do before we get those official estimates for yield and production, but we know that we're going to land somewhere above that 2 million bale mark on the High Plains of Texas. And again, that's much lower than what our long-term average is of around 3.7 million bales, but better than the two previous years. So at least we're headed in the right direction on that, Tony. And I hope that things will be better for 25.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Ms. Gallagher, one of the major reasons to extend the 2017 Trump tax cuts as soon as possible is to give America workers, families, farmers, and small businesses certainty in the long run.
At a House Ways and Means committee hearing on Tuesday, the chairman from Missouri, Jason Smith.
Small businesses are facing a 43.4% tax rate if the 199A small business deduction, as I refer to it, expires. This looming threat impacts decisions they are making today about whether to invest, grow, hire. The same is true for the 2 million family farmers facing a potential increase in their death tax. If Congress doesn't act soon, family-owned farms and Main Street businesses will have to start calling estate planners and accountants to figure out how they navigate the potential increases in taxes. So can you speak to how this uncertainty drives decision-making today among America's families, farmers, small businesses?
Michelle Gallagher is a CPA from Michigan.
My phone has been ringing off the hook since last August with the pending election of families and business owners and the uncertainty of where this tax change may go. We have been running meetings and scenarios with our clients for months now, trying to plan for the future. Many successful businesses do their forecasting out not just 1 year, which is just the year we're in now, but the most successful ones plan out 3 years, 5 years, 10 years out, especially when they're looking at investing, whether it's investing into more employees or more equipment. That takes capital, and it takes time to accumulate that capital to be able to afford it. And so it is imperative as an advisor to these folks to be able to help them navigate these tax policies. I've been around 35 tax seasons, and I have experienced last-minute tax changes by our government, and it is extremely frustrating, not only on the taxpayers, but frankly and selfishly, the advisors as well. So I can't encourage you enough to do this swiftly and quickly to help our businesses and our farmers.
Texas Democrat Representative Lloyd Doggett.
Only last week, President-elect Trump told Americans that on food, we can expect, quote, some pretty drastic price reductions. I think all of us would wish him well on that and eagerly await his fulfilling his promise, oft repeated, to lower drastically the price of food. Most economists, however, are concerned that his policies will have exactly the opposite effect. Indeed, the minutes of the last Federal Reserve meeting suggest that we may already be paying higher interest rates because of their concern that Trump will stoke inflation. This is especially true regarding his declaration that, quote, the most beautiful word in the dictionary is tariff, and it's my favorite word. Well, in Texas, a Trump grocery tariff tax, which he can impose as soon as next Monday, will likely increase grocery prices on most every vegetable and most fruits that we buy. Overall, Republican eagerness for a trade war that no one will win, beginning with the imposition of multiple Trump tariff taxes, a regressive form of taxation, and the resulting retaliation by other countries, and Republican reliance on tariff taxes to offset their tax breaks for the super wealthy, will continue to shift the tax burden to some of the very type of businesses that are represented on this panel.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
There are still some gins that are still in operation. As a matter of fact, if we look at the classing office reports from last week, they were still receiving classing information and samples in from more than 40 gins across the area.
Mark Brown is Director of Field Services with Plains Cotton Growers.
I know of some gins that are still running in the Panhandle, the northern panhandle, that is. And then yesterday I was down in Dawson County near La Mesa, and there were still some operation going on down there. So I would say that finally our harvest season is winding down, but still some activity and still some gins bringing in cotton and trying to wrap up the last of it. You know, this one was certainly a different season. We all talked about hoping to see a harvest season that was quick and compressed, and unfortunately that did not happen. I had some gins that started ginning in early October, and you know, it took forever on the high plains for us to get what we would really consider to be a killing freeze. We were all the way up into December before that actually happened. And then also, in addition to that, we had at least three pretty significant rainfall events across the area in November. So we got a lot of November rainfall that is typically pretty unusual for us. And I know that the gins had to fight that, and they had to fight it out in the fields where they were trying to finish harvesting. And even though that makes for a very difficult situation, you know that in West Texas, we'll never turn rain down. And we do know that even though you have to battle that during the harvest season, that will help the situation for next year. I have heard of people that have told me that they've got a good 4 feet of moisture profile right now. So that will, unless that's used by a wheat crop or something similar, that will set there in reserve for next year, for this upcoming growing season. I almost said next year. We're at next year. We're now in the 25 season, so it's upon us.
Fiber is important to the cotton industry, but so is cottonseed. Cody Besson, CEO of Plains Cotton Growers.
Cottonseed usually flows with the same market with beans, with an oilseed-based market. We're very fortunate within the U.S. that the vast majority of our seed is domestically consumed, largely because of the beneficiary of dairies, where the vast majority of cotton is grown in the U.S. There's a substantial amount of dairies that can tap into that. But unfortunately, there's been an overabundance of supply, and so the market itself is sort of dictating that across the board from a pricing standpoint of anywhere from, let's say, $250 a ton to $300 a ton versus where we were a couple of years ago when we were more at that $310 to $350 a ton, if not even higher. It varies by region, but it certainly is indicative of the fact that the economy itself is still kind of squashed a little bit. And so hopefully going into a new year, we can take some of that reserve off of the balance sheet and run through that supply and have a good crop year where we can replenish that supply, but also build up that pricing standpoint and that reserve. So that way dairies can function in a very amicable manner. Producers can still make some profitability. And same for other various uses that are used within the oilseed side, the crush side, and the overall logistics side from not just cotton, but other row crops, other commodities like soybeans too.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
We got old as a society. We didn't have as many children. We made lots of promises, and we never set aside enough money for them. But we can disrupt the cost if we're willing to adopt modernization. You can cut stunning amounts of money from the delivery of health care, not by cutting services, but by adopting technology.
Arizona Representative David Schweikert on the economy, the budget, and debt.
Except once again, the lobbyists are in the hallway to stop you from doing that because it would make them change their bureaucracies and their business models. But a number like this should make us all pucker. That if we just went back to normal interest rates, in 9 years, 45% of all of our tax receipts go into just interest. That's called interest fragility. It's the single thing that scares me the most in the society is we're no longer in charge. We've basically made the decision the debt markets are. So let's actually get a little more dystopian. And part of this is to make an impact. What if we went to 9% interest? It's happened. What would happen? Can you read this number? 83% of all tax receipts would go just to interest. And here's the reality of today. For every dollar we take in tax receipts, we spend $1.39. Yet, what we call discretionary, military has been substantially flat. All other non-defense discretionary is basically flat. Almost all the growth is two things, been healthcare and interest. Well, we can't do anything about interest. You know, the deal is the deal is the deal when we sell a bond. And healthcare, well, there's an army of lobbyists, once again, outside these walls, who will beat the absolute living blank out of us when we ask them to modernize, actually use technology. Even our brothers and sisters here are often defending not last decades, but the decade before that's business models within healthcare. We don't have a choice. Open up your brains, hire a computer brain, hire some kid who's a data analyst, scientist, and start walking through the facts of what's going on, and then we have to do hard things. We're going to have to do a revolution on... Have you seen the numbers coming out of Medicare Advantage? Have anyone taken a look at those Wall Street Journal articles in the last year? The billions and billions and billions that they're documenting are functionally fraud and abuse? Are we going to be honest about it? And there's ways elegantly to fix it without beating the crap out of everyone. We just need to recognize our own problems. But once again, for every dollar the United States takes in tax receipts, we spend $1.39. And right now I need to go back to an oldie but a goodie, and I've done entire floor presentations repeatedly on this. You take all the tax hike proposals of our brothers and sisters on the left and score them for their economic effects, it produced about a point and a half of GDP of new tax receipts. You take for our side all the cuts we've talked about, almost all of them being in non-defense discretionary. It's about 1 point of GDP. Add those two together, that's what? 2.5. Congratulations. So everything the talking heads here do behind these microphones is 2.5%. We're borrowing 7% this year of the entire economy. And here's your crisis. The solutions sound really good in a television commercial, maybe an interview on cable television, and they're crap math. They don't get you anywhere close with what's necessary because it turns out the actual scale of the math, it's so far beyond just raise people's taxes, just slash and burn this. You need a revolution on how we deliver on our commitments. And why is that harder? I still can't get my head around here why that's harder.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
It is known as 45Z, the Clean Fuels Production Credit, proposed as an incentive for production of sustainable aviation fuel and other non-SAF fuels. Implementation and availability of these credits are now one step closer, thanks to recent Treasury Department and Internal Revenue Service guidance issued for 45Z. Biofuel industry members, such as Robert White of the Renewable Fuels Association and Emily Score of Growth Energy, explain the significance of Z45 in growing the SAF sector.
Ultimately, it incentivizes the airlines and fuel producers to utilize more low-carbon fuels to make sustainable aviation fuel.
It is technology neutral, and the incentive is to growers, ethanol producers.
Treasury in coming days is scheduled to release notice of intent to propose 45Z regulations and an annual emission rate table. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.